When facing chronic disease, it can be extremely difficult to figure out what changes you need to make in your life to actually heal and become whole again. Functional medicine fills in the gaps where evidence-based medicine, Western medicine, has not yet been able to identify the holes. Oftentimes, when it comes to healthcare, we try to place evidence on top of a person instead of having one clear view that the person in front of you, the patient in front of you, is the whole story, the beginning, the middle, and the end. We can't underestimate a driven patient, a patient who knows that change is needed. The real work that functional medicine brings to the table is the ability to really look at the body as a whole and to look at mental, emotional, and social health as critically important in overcoming illness. We have to figure out what are the obstacles that prevent patients from taking sustainable actions that will lead to overall well-being. And how can we look at these obstacles and address how do we remove them so that we can get to where true health lies? My guest today is Dr. Shilpa Saxena. She is such an inspiration for me because she has the ability to really get heart to heart with her patients. She helps people to create awareness around their health behaviors so that they can transform into healthier people. She is also a female leader in medicine, a woman of color who understands that when we don't take into account the patient's individuality, we fail them. She and I talk today about the limitations of evidence-based medicine. We talk about what is bringing her hope in a time when it just seems so hopeless. We talk about the importance of belonging. We talk about how group and community are essential for well-being. And we talk about where functional medicine differs from all of the other medical practices that are out there because it truly puts the patient at the center of the story and helps to remove obstacles that are standing in the way of health. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus, you'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Shilpa Saxena, MD, IFMCP, is a board-certified family physician whose passion and purpose come to life through an uncompromising dedication to health and care. Beyond continuing to practice as medical director for Forum Health in Tampa, Dr. Saxena also serves as chief medical officer at Forum Health, which is a nationwide provider of personalized health services. Whether she is partnering with her own patients, training new to functional medicine providers in her various faculty roles, guiding practices on how to best implement the science and partnerships that have been so successful to her group visit toolkits, or collaborating with functional medicine thought leaders to transform healthcare. It is evident that Dr. Saxena is 110% devoted to making good medicine available to the masses. Dr. Saxena graduated from the University of Florida College of Medicine through the prestigious Junior Honors Medical Program. She completed her family practice residency training at St. Vincent's Medical Center in Jacksonville, Florida, and served as chief resident and received additional certifications in low-risk obstetrics. She solidified her understanding of the continuum of health and disease, but saw many missed opportunities for disease reversal while caring for the rural and urban underserved families of North Jacksonville. Dr. Shilpa Saxena, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Lindsay. I'm so excited to be able to share.
I have a confession. You're a little bit of a celebrity in my mind, like all these like functional medicine gurus, and I have so enjoyed learning from you and actually thought about swinging by your office. I was down in your neighborhood very recently, and just kind of you're not only a physician, but you have a pharmacist embedded in your clinic, which as a a family medicine trained pharmacist, I'm a huge fan of those partnerships that can happen between physicians and pharmacists. So I first learned about you because of my education that I've gotten from the Institute of Functional Medicine, and it completely shifted my way of thinking about illness, about thinking about disease. What is it about functional medicine that is different than the standard medical approach in the United States?
Great question. And I have, one of the things that I love to do to make life easier for me, and it seems to be something that other people enjoy, is I'm going to keep it real simple. And I'm going to speak to us like people versus academics or providers, if that works for you. So, the way I look at it is that when you see a physician, provider, pharmacist in the conventional model, they view you definitely as a tree, but they own a branch. And so most people have multi-branch issues. And when I say issues, I don't mean that they have full-out disease, but multiple branches are not working. And what they've been trained to do is swing from branch to branch, like, okay, I'm going to see the gut doctor for my gut issues and the GYN for my hormone, and whoop, let me swing to skin here because that's completely disconnected from everything else. And at some point, there is so much swinging on that tree that the person gets like, there is no way if I'm a gardener of life of my tree that all these branches are not working as well without taking a look down at the roots, the soil, the sun. Is there some infection that connects all these branches? And so the clear difference between conventional medicine and functional medicine is rather than swinging from branch to branch, we really get down to the seed. We start looking seed up versus branch down. And we look at everything that happens to that seed to understand what's going on with the tree today. Because just like with adults, it's what happened in our first 10, 20 years of life that really determines a lot about what happens when we're 30, 40, 50, 60, because we just compound our strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We've talked on this show with Dr. Sarah Gottfried about how truly influential adverse childhood experiences can be in our long-term health. And knowing that the average patient gets 8 minutes with a physician and that they get cut off from speaking within the first 10 seconds of coming into an interview, there is no way that this model will allow you to get down to the seed, get down to the roots. And I love the image of branches that are just swinging, because at some point when everything is flailing around you, the patient loses themselves. They lose themselves. And I think what is so frustrating is it feels like you're starting at zero every single time. So talk to us next. One of the things I love about functional medicine is it says, okay, look, there is something underlying the skin rashes. There is something underlying the gut dysfunction and the dysbiosis. There's something underlying the headaches. And so teach us, in your years of practice, what do you see as the, like, okay, do these things basically everybody. If you can do these things, you're going to be on a healthier pathway.
I have a simple way of remembering these things. I call it bring more goodness into your life. Okay, so what do I mean by that? The first part of goodness is the word good. You've got to be good with yourself. Like, really be good with yourself. What does that mean? You've got to clean up your mess, your mental, emotional, social, and spiritual health. So if you clean up your mess, mental, emotional, spiritual, social health, then you're good with yourself. And then that next part of the word goodness, which is nutrition, exercise, sleep, and stress management, starts to fall into place. What many people do is they start hitting the nest hard, like, let me get the right diet. Let me do the latest this workout or this meditation technique. All good, but it is doomed to fail if you have not cleaned up enough of your mess. Mm-hmm. And so when you get stuck on nests, I'm always saying, go back to your mess. What's missing? What's not working as well as you should? Address some bit of your mess. And I guarantee that the nest will fall into place that much easier.
It's so hard sometimes to actually care about yourself enough to make the seemingly mundane series of decisions that it actually takes to be healthy. It sounds too simple. I mean, I'm thinking of a listener right now who's like, this doc doesn't know me. I've had Hashimoto's for the past 15 years, been told that I'm going to be on meds for life. I've had chronic diarrhea for 10 years, all these things. And yet it comes down to, do you care about yourself enough to take care of your mental and emotional mess and be good with yourself? And then actually eat better, exercise, sleep at night, and practice stress reduction. So how do you get somebody? This is very personal to me right now. I've got somebody very dear to me struggling with addiction and is about to go in for a third try at rehab and getting clean. And they asked me, because I was one of the main people that encouraged, like, you've got to go. You've got to go back. You've got to keep trying. And it ultimately came down to, you don't think you matter. You don't think you matter. And that's so hard. So how do you get people to take that first radical step into genuinely love yourself?
You know, I think it starts with awareness that you're not doing it. If you do not have awareness that you are not being good to yourself, how can you begin to take a first step? I think there's such an automatic, whether it's biochemical or cultural or social, that we are taught, like, we're not important. If you prioritize yourself, this is, you know, you're selfish, or you're too weak, you're too overweight, you're too genetically doomed. You've got a lot of things pre-built into our culture that kind of teach us, don't try. It's not worth it. Just find the right Band-Aid. And then people go looking for a Band-Aid, whether it's a, you know, pharmaceutical or procedure. And then when that fails, they confirm, like, yep, I guess there's something wrong with me, as opposed to, I'm good, I'm worthy. What is getting in the way of this showing up? Now, this person that you talked about, I mean, if we could take a little bit of a tangent, because the whole mental health, addiction, kind of, I'll call them epidemics, are going on, and they're just getting worsened because of the pandemic and the mess the pandemic is creating, right? Mental, emotional, social, spiritual stuff. So the human brain, this is the beauty of functional medicine. If you understand what the brain needs to function, it needs certain nourishment. It needs to get that from a healthy gut. But if it can't get it from a healthy gut, then there are ways that we can give, through a functional medicine perspective, amino acids to this dear friend of yours. These amino acids are the building blocks for neurotransmitters. So you give that brain nourishment. And then the other thing that is necessary for some brains, most brains, I was just having a conversation with one of my colleagues about this, is that I've never met a human who's not been traumatized. It doesn't have to be horrible. It could just be my fifth grade teacher told me I was stupid. And that still sticks as a trauma story. So what we do for patients, for example, who have serious conditions that limit their ability to see the good in themselves, sometimes we need to nourish the brain and undo trauma stories. So we'll take a combination of amino acids, and then we do something in our practice called ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, where we actually use ancient principles that were used, you know, in South America, like ayahuasca, to access this softer version of the ego. And then we do this very gentle psychotherapy. And it's equal to like 2 years of cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And this friend of yours is definitely a special, special person who is in a special situation about finding the good in herself. I mean, she's got a few things racked up against her, but if we employ what we understand about functional medicine, she too can access the goodness model. For most others who are not kind of at the severe, you know, addiction, depression state, it's really a wake-up call of awareness, I think, and a constant awareness, right? Like, we'll fall into that trap and it's like, no, Shilpa, you're sabotaging. You do deserve a nap. No, you do get to say no, Shilpa.
It's so astonishing that this is simply how we are built as humans. For whatever reason, it's like, I don't matter, and I will destroy my body with either food or sedentarism or being constantly distressed all the time, or just not being able to feel at home in our skin. And so I'd love to talk a little bit more about being a woman in medicine and seeing female patients, being a person of color, practicing in medicine. And I thought it was interesting on your notes that you sent in, you said that there was always some friction in when you had to like pick race on forms. And as we take a look at what is broken about the American healthcare system, we simply cannot ignore that healthcare disparities not only exist now, but have existed for so long that we don't even see them anymore. So talk to us a little bit about, like, how do you deal with the social mess when social messes are dramatically different for different people depending on the color of your skin, where you were raised, and all of the various factors that go into this social healthcare net?
Such a great question, and such an important part of what we really need to face as a healthcare industry if we really want to make dents and like leaps in the problems that we have created in this industry. We need to take a very forgiving look at ourselves. And I say that very clearly, a forgiving look at ourselves, because, you know, the industry is wrought with ego. It's wrought with people trying to prove that they're right. So we just take a humble and forgiving approach to ourselves. But, you know, Lindsay, when I graduated high school in 1991, and the little, there was these two older women who were at the voter registration desk, you know, helping seniors register to vote. They gave me a card, and it, my options were, and this was in a beach town in South Florida on the East Coast, white and black. And I looked at the women and I said, well, I'm not white and I'm not black. And they said, well, which one are you more like? And I remember looking at them going, which one are you more like, Chinese or you know, like German? Like, you might not be either. Mm-hmm. So I remember realizing very quickly, I grew up in Queens, New York, where there was no such thing as a majority. So everybody kind of was a minority. We realized everybody was different, but we honored it. So I was blessed with a context of open-mindedness and non-judgment. So I think it's one of the reasons why I might be able to hear disparity easily, because I was tuned to that growing up. But for a vast majority of healthcare providers, we were raised in environments where you didn't have to worry about others. Like, you know, I remember whenever I filled out forms, I was like, where's the other? Like, I was completely okay with being other. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until residency where there was a slot that said Indo-Pakistani that I'm like, that's me. You finally recognize me, because there's funny stories up until then. But what I try to do is this principle that kind of comes from a faith-based perspective. And that is I don't try to see myself as different than others. I try to see myself as one with others. And how do I do that? Well, many people, when they meet with a patient, they try to put themselves in that person's shoes. But the problem is you can't put yourself at that moment in that person's shoes, because they had a whole life prior to that. So what I try to do is actually what I'll call be out here with them, not out there, like out there where I'm separate from them, but like really be out here as though I was them. And as I'm doing a timeline analysis of the seed to the branch, I am being that person and wondering, what must that be like? And then asking questions in discovery, not in inquisition and interrogation, but in discovery. And it is the questioning coming from being out here with them and in discovery that all of a sudden opens a person up to say, even though you may not completely get me, I get that you are trying to be here with me. And I'm like, I feel supported. I feel like I belong with you in the humanity of it all. Mm-hmm. And then magic occurs. Until someone feels safe with you, truly safe with you, you will not get a sense of what really is affecting them. So we could sit here and talk about you need to be gluten-free and da 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 da, but that's just such so superficial stuff until you really get that sense of belonging with them, that sense of safety, and that sense of discovery. Like, I'm on this ride with you. I think that's mm-hmm. the magic. People always ask me, oh, you don't do all this expensive testing. You don't do all these expensive treatments. How do you get results? My opinion is if you can make someone feel safe, their autonomic nervous system calms down and any therapy works better. Mm-hmm. Any mm-hmm. therapy works better because the body, the mind, the spirit is all open to getting better.
It does. It makes sense. I mean, it's the very core idea behind the placebo effect. If you believe that something is going to be good for you, it has a higher likelihood of being good for you. And you know, one of the things that you said really echoed what I talked with Patrick Hanaway about on the show, which is becoming comfortable with uncertainty and not knowing. And this image that as you were talking, I was just imagining a patient in a room with that doctor who has to be right, who has to be right all of the time. And some of my listeners know I'm a really big fan of true crime podcasts. That's going to be my side job. And listening to true crime podcasts surrounding medicine, it is astonishing just how far that ego can take people away from first do no harm. And I love what you said, it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to spend $1,000 on labs. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Black Friday is this Friday, and over at lindseyelmore.com, everything is on sale. You can get 25% off the Clean Slate Cleanse cookbook and workbook bundle. You can get 25% off of the Essentials book and pre-order the brand new Bountiful cookbook packed with some of my newest and favorite recipes for 15% off. I will also be hosting a metabolic makeover boot camp in February. So once you get past all of the decadence of the holidays, you can come back, take some time to rest and restore in January, and then dive deep into healing your metabolism at 25% off when you shop the Metabolic Makeover Bootcamp on this Black Friday. Don't wait. All of these deals begin at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Thanksgiving evening and go through Cyber Monday. After that, all of the savings are gone. Head to lindseyelmore.com/Black Friday to see all of the special details today. And now, let's get back to the show. But talk to us now, because many of our listeners, they struggle with the integration. You know, they want their essential oils and they want their goji berries and their spirulina, but then on the other hand, they still are on a statin medicine, or they still are taking high blood pressure medicines or thyroid medicines, or they want to understand better how to live in both of those worlds, which functional medicine does, I think, better than just about any kind of medicine. And yet there is this common opinion that you're either one or the other. You're either 100% natural, or you get your 8 minutes with your physician and here's 14 medications that you're going to need to take for life. So how can people become more gentle? And give us some examples of where you have seen the combination of medications, cognitive behavioral therapy go really well alongside more alternative means?
Great question. So yes, I think the other thing that humans love to do is make things binary, you know, like make things very divisive. And I think that's the ego speaking, like, well, if I'm going to be right about something, let me create a boundary around it, because this is what I'm going to put my whole identity around. And then everything outside of this circle is not correct. So I think so if I'm functional medicine, then everything else conventional or alternative or this is incorrect. And it, to me, does not describe how the universe works. The universe is infinite, right? So there's infinite possibilities, infinite options, and you are just as infinite in your potential. So the way I kind of coach my patients is, listen, every day you're a new person. And every day we get to look at what is your menu of options and what is the right thing for you on that day, what will work for you on that day. And so here's an example. I have a patient who I started taking care of when she was 15, already diagnosed with PCOS, irregular periods. She also had extreme kind of, I'll just say, like, really prone to wanting everything to be perfect, overachiever, overanalyzer. And so she had also developed Barrett's esophagus and was on proton pump inhibitors at age 15. Fast forward, she's married and she wants to have children. And she realizes my testosterone is still high. And then, you know, I was explaining to her that her chronic stress is driving this testosterone production, this HPA axis, hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, is driving this testosterone. So can we use some things that you might be open to? Like, what makes you happy? And so she's like, art makes me happy. Okay, Let's leverage artist therapy and let's calm down the HPA axis. That's not conventional medicine. Some people might call that alternative. I don't care what you call it. All I call it is something that reduces the HPA axis of stress, and she's happy for it. She's improving her mess. So her androgens come down, and then of course she's going through the infertility workup because she'd already been seeing a reproductive endocrinologist due to her severe PCOS. And the, you know, the whole system is fraught with like, do this pharmaceutical. And she was doing the pharmaceutical, the Clomid and the injections, and she was doing all that kind of stuff. So again, sometimes if you want to have a baby and you've got some stuff going on, there's definitely a place for reproductive endocrinology, but it was starting to create stress for her again. So she was in this vicious cycle. So I invited her to consider, hey, what if you just had fun having sex with your husband? What would that be like? And I said, can you just give it a month of just not caring about being perfect about your medications or being perfect about your art? And as you've probably heard many times before, when people quote unquote give up, they become pregnant. Now, what's interesting is that was such a strong driver of her PCOS, the stress, that she just needed permission to be able to let go. She started having fun with sex. Interestingly enough, then she got pregnant. And then she, since 15, had been fearing infertility since she had PCOS. So when she had, when she became pregnant and she had her first baby, fears went away, acid reflux gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's how it's connected. But then we tapered her off of her PPI as she said she was getting better. We did a titration protocol. This is where our functional pharmacist was really, really useful in helping us kind of understand, hey, what are the risks when she has Barrett's, and still working with the GI doctor to make sure she's getting her endoscopies, because we're not trying to increase risk while we're taking off her off of medications. So that's a perfect example of a functional approach, leveraging what conventional medicine can do and bringing in alternative. And I don't care what you call it in that whole process. It was just looking at her as a whole and not labeling anything as right or wrong, just what was needed at the moment.
You know, the more I learn about the root causes of disease, I've almost come to the conclusion, like, if it ain't stress and it ain't insulin, it's none of the above, you know? And we've talked on the show a lot about the stains moniker and just like, where are you looking? But I really think you could get rid of like all the other everything. Because if stress is a cornerstone symptom that you experience, it makes everything worse. It totally makes everything worse. And as we've talked about with Dr. Casey Means on the show, you know, you look at like this hierarchy of things that are going awry in the body. And I think so many reproductive fertility docs, they're thinking estrogen, testosterone, progesterone. But if you got problems there, you probably have problems with your thyroid and you probably have problems with cortisol or insulin. And talk to us, because one of my favorite things about cortisol and insulin is we have dramatic abilities to regulate them in our bodies. So how, if somebody is like listening to this and they're like, I am constantly under stress, I'm carrying a couple extra pounds around the midsection, I haven't checked my fasting blood sugar, but it's probably a little bit elevated, how can people take better ownership and control over cortisol and insulin in their bodies?
Okay, I'm going to go back to goodness. Okay, so if I can give a little bit more structure around the whole acronym. So when you start saying, I think I'm stressed, I want you to get a little bit more granular about it. I want to ask you to ask yourself, what is stressing you out? Is it your mental health? And when I use the word mental, I mean, is it your thoughts? Are you having too many of them? Are you having speeding versions of them? Are they sluggish? Like, is it your thoughts? Okay, meaning like, that's one of the things I tend to do. I tend to get obsessive about, like, you talk to me and I'm like, let me see, I'm going to figure out 17 different ways I'm going to answer Lindsay. And that's how I know, like, your thoughts are out of control. You don't need to know 17 different answers for Lindsay, right? So is it that you have too many thoughts? And if you have too many thoughts or they're racing, then now start addressing that in a way. See, you now have some granular way of knowing what you need to address. How do you do that? Maybe deep breathing, like focus your thoughts on something. What if it's emotions, like feelings? It's not necessarily thoughts, but just feelings like sadness takes over or irritability takes over. Look into the causes of that. Is it hormone? Is it like a social relationship that's not working? So that brings you to social. Do you not have a sense of belonging? If not, go find something where you belong. I started art classes because those were my people. Even though I love medicine, I love creative spirits. So I found a sense of belonging there more than I do sometimes with, you know, the conventional doctors in my community. I'd rather go to an art conference than a medical conference with my conventional peers. And last is spiritual. It's really important to be connected to something sacred. It doesn't have to necessarily be God, although that is something common for people, just something bigger than yourself that explains, like, what's your purpose on this planet? And see, that mess is when you start getting granular about stress, you'll see that it's usually one of those four things. And I'm just going to remind people, knowing everything I've taught you here now doesn't change a lick. You must do something. If you want to actually get a different result, you have to do something different. So if you find out it's your thoughts or your feelings or your social or your spiritual, take a new action in that. And it doesn't have to be monstrous. You don't have to join a new church or it doesn't have to be huge. It could just be, I'm going to start reading this book that I remember I've been wanting to read about this to help me with this, or I'm going to go see the counselor because I've been meaning to do that or whatever. I feel like people just get stuck in trying to get the right answer that they do no action.
Another thing that I think can be so stressful about trying to get to the root cause is there's too many dang opinions. And as you said, you wake up every day as a new person. There's infinite possibilities. There's infinite ways to heal, and there's infinite ways to destruct. And when I interviewed Seema Yasmin on the show, one of the things that really stuck out to me that I think makes it really hard for people to make decisions is we've lost that beauty of uncertainty in medicine. And in media reporting, we try to get things into this like simple box of like, this is the correct way to go about things. So if people are interested in researching and learning more about themselves and really trying to tap into, okay, I've got PCOS. I know I need to do something different. Where are some of your favorite reputable resources, books that you really like? How do people actually make these changes without falling into, and now I'm keto, and now I'm intermittent fasting, and now I meditate 30 minutes a day? Like, how do people actually decide I'm going to try this new thing?
Great question. I'd love to answer that first, number one, by going back into your question and deconstructing it just a bit. Now, I'm going to say that one of the things that gets people all trapped up is trying to find the right answer, the right book, the right, you know, exercise. And then we construe it as a challenge. There's nothing hard about changing your diet. When I say, drink an extra cup of water, is that hard? Maybe it is for some people, but hard is a story that we tell ourselves because we have it up against some version of perfection or right. So if I tell you, listen, if you just start drinking an extra cup of water every day, you're in the right direction. That's right. Then it's not hard, I would assume. Or if I tell you, can you eat vegetables 2 more times a week? And that incremental shift in the things you already know you're supposed to do. See, this is the thing. A big portion of what I train is you already know what you're supposed to be doing, supposed to be, okay? Like, I know I should drink more water. I don't need a book to tell me that. I know I could eat more vegetables. I don't need to read a book. The problem that I think most people have is they already know what is missing in their lifestyle regimen. You don't need a book. What you're looking for, honestly, at times is some other person's right answer. And I invite you to consider that you have all the answers that you need to start this baby off. Just ask yourself, what do you resist? What is it that you know intuitively that you need to be doing to help your body? Your body is speaking to you. So then instead of thinking like, I need to exercise and that's overwhelming, can you put on sneakers and walk to the front of the driveway and come back every day? Like, can you make it so small that even you could do it? And then take that on. Like, I can eat broccoli once a week. I can do it. Make it so small that even you could do it in your mind, and then do it. And then now you have a sense of power back. Like, you have your power coming back. Wouldn't you say, Lindsay, that you probably already know what is the next lifestyle action you would want to take?
Oh my good. I mean, it's all the things. What do I need more of in my life? More meditation. I need to not stay up. Last night I stayed up till like 12:30, and it's like, why am I still awake? Go to bed. And I'm going
to
confess.
Do you need a book to tell you that?
No, I don't need a book.
Do you need a sleep hygiene recipe to tell you that you need to go to bed a little bit earlier?
No.
So my point is like, how about you just start with the stuff you already know and do a small little piece of it? Like, you know, and I'm just modeling here, Lindsay, if you allow me to, like, perhaps you can tell yourself, you know what? I'm not allowed to stay up past 12:15 any night this week. Like, see if you could take that on. And then you back it up to 12. And then maybe at that point, you're like, I don't want to do sleep anymore. I think I'm going to take on meditation. Let me see if I can meditate for 5 minutes. One day this week. I don't know. Like, most of us think it has to be like, I need to hit enlightenment when I meditate 7 days a week. I need to levitate while I'm doing it. Like, and they make it such a big goal that they can't even start it. I invite people to consider it's actually not that complicated. It's a story you've created in your head based on it having to be a certain way.
Yeah. It's super simplify. And I agree with you so much about like when you actually do something, you know, BJ Fogg's work, Tiny Habits, I love, because you'll hear him say like, floss one tooth. And all of a sudden you're the person who flosses, you know, meditate for 1 second and you are now a meditator. Do one push-up and now you exercise. Just do all the things. Let's actually dive into exercise a little bit, because one of the things that you taught me is diversity and joy in exercise. Like, that's another thing that people are so dogmatic about. If it's not running a marathon, it's not exercise. And I did some social media posts, we'll tag them in the show notes, inspired by you and just the diversity of how people can exercise. So how do you go from a couch to being an exerciser? How do you help people to exercise and move more?
Awesome question. So first of all, I'm gonna let you know that my great grandmother likely did not even know what the word exercise was, but she was doing it better than most people in this country. So let's consider for the first, you know, step, that the word exercise is kind of wrought with a lot of expectations in your own mind, okay? But let's just maybe call the word movement, all right? So there's two different kinds of movement that you can start to consider. If you're on the couch, there's definitely, if you will, exercise, which is structured, like going to a gym or doing a video workout. That's like your structured exercise. Then there's another form of movement, which is just what we call non-exercise activity thermogenesis. You can just call it NEAT. And that's just like taking the stairs, walking the length of the parking lot to get into your big box store to get your groceries or whatever. That's just the stuff you do. And you don't actually call it exercise, but it's just movement. So when you're sitting on the couch, you get to choose, which one do you want to start? Do you want to start structured or unstructured? Okay, so let's just say you pick structured. I'm going to walk. Okay, well, you might just want to, literally, this is how I start some people off. Like, I want you to buy a pair of sneakers if you don't have one, put them on every day and walk to the front door. And then what generally happens is people will get to the front door. They're like, well, heck, I've got these sneakers on. I might as well walk a little bit. Okay. It's just usually getting past that first little bit. So then you can start to increase your exercise, assuming that you've been cleared and you don't have any significant risk factors. Like, you don't go get on a treadmill and try to run a 5K if you haven't been exercising, but just slowly, incrementally increase structured exercise. And I would invite you to do the thing that makes you feel good. So when you're done with exercise, if you feel a relaxed energy, then you've done the right exercise for you. If you feel depleted, then you've overdone it. So that's a measure of if you've done the exercise that your body needed. Now, some of you, like me, like, don't love structured exercise some days. I just don't want to be told what to do. I don't want to be told 12 reps and this many that's and whatever. So then I'm going to prioritize unstructured exercise. We have, and I'm happy to provide this to you, Lindsay, a handout, which is an 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. hourly desk workout. Like, what can you do for 1 minute at your desk? And we'll show you modifications on how to do push-ups at your desk. And sometimes it's just like, okay, I'm just going to move your body 5 minutes every hour. And it could just be to get up and go to the kitchen and go stir a pot and get it ready for dinner. That could be a huge achievement, because moving every hour, if you didn't move every hour, if you were sedentary for 8 hours a day, it's equivalent in risk as smoking for cardiovascular disease. I don't think people get that. So just getting your bottom up 5 minutes every hour could be just the goal. And, you know, maybe you don't do it for 8 hours straight. Maybe you just do it for a few hours on the first week. But I think if you choose structured or unstructured and start incrementally going up, the goal is to have both, to have around 150 minutes of structured exercise in a week with hourly movement during the day while you're awake, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does not have to be lifting weights at the gym for an hour. And the other thing I like about doing just the non-structured, where you're just moving, is it feels very, very accomplishable. You know, you can get up and either walk or lift weights or do some stretching every hour. You can absolutely do it. I remember when I worked at Kaiser Permanente, our computers would send us alerts because they had so many people that were just seated all day, and it had us do wrist stretches and all kinds of just moments where you can kind of quiet your mind alongside doing exercises. Before I let you go, I feel like right now that there is so much uncertainty and concern, and people feel like I think in a lot of different ways feel like they're losing autonomy over their health, and they're losing their ability to say, this is what I want done to my body. So what is inspiring you right now, giving you hope for the future? What are some of the things that you have come across recently that you're like, wow, this is a powerful force of goodness in medicine right now?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm going to just say that many times there is some sort of tragedy or negativity that is needed to inspire our best humanity. And I don't know if you've seen it, but just as much as we see some of the, I'll just call it uglier sides of humanity, you know, in people, we will also see some of the most generous aspects of our nature coming out. And what's inspiring me these days is the network of functional and integrative medicine physicians and providers that I'm a part of. We are a network of 18 practices, all banding together, sharing our wisdom, sharing what works, sharing our struggles. And we are creating a social network. And what we notice is, my goodness, like this ketamine assisted psychotherapy that I talked to you about, that was not going to happen unless I was part of this network where another individual was generous enough to teach me what I needed to know so I could help an 18-year-old suicidal boy be able to go to college and accomplish his dream. So what is inspiring me these days is the tribe of functional and integrative medicine doctors that I have the privilege to work with. And I just have a small world of how generosity shows up. That's kind of like my buzzword these days, is just seeing the generosity of others. When people, like, to the point, like if somebody opens the door for me, I'm like, thank you for noticing me. Like, thank you for being so generous with your awareness that you noted me. But before I was like, that's good manners. You should do that. I don't know if that makes sense. Do you ever get judgy like that about like good, bad, right, wrong?
Oh, all of the time. But it's what Mr. Rogers taught us. It's when bad things happen, look for the helpers. Like, look for our common humanness. And I think, oh my goodness, how the world would change if we all just paused and said, it's what you said at the very beginning. Like, I see myself as one with humanity. And that is so, so powerful, because when we start thinking of ourselves as other, that's when bad stuff happens. It's when your doctor doesn't pay attention to you. It's when the person doesn't think you're worth opening a door for, maybe even slams a door right in your face. When we start to see ourselves as other, it causes stress. It causes conflict. There's so much. I thank you so much for sharing that, because I think it gives everybody something that you can do. Focus on gratitude. Focus on seeing generosity in the world, and watch your stress levels start to fall slowly over time. Oh, so beautiful. So I thank you so much for coming on the show today. Listeners, if you would like to learn more about Dr. Saxena and the work that she does, head to www.drshilpasaxena.com. That's D-R-S-H-I-L-P-A. Saxena is S-A-X-E-N-A. So thank you so much for coming in and sharing your wisdom today on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. And if I may just say, please, please, please do not see the other in yourself. Like,
yes.
If there's one person you do not need to be other with, let that voice inside you not be the other. Listen to that intuition. It will guide you. Be one with yourself. Do not create another in you.
I love it. It all comes down to, can you truly love yourself enough to take care of yourself? That's our human journey. Beautiful.
Mic drop.
12 Days of Giftmas is right around the corner, but if you don't want to wait, you can shop our sponsors epic Black Friday deals this week. Our friends over at Eaton Hemp are offering 40% off all orders, plus a free tincture if you shop more than $300 and use the code CYBER. Our friends over at Amare are offering 30% off all orders of $175 or more on Cyber Monday. And throughout the entire Black Friday, you can save an epic 20% on my favorite EMF mitigating devices over at SomaVedic. That's just the beginning of things. You can head over to lindseyelmore.com/shop12days to find out all of the Black Friday deals that are being offered by our 12 Days of Giftmas sponsors. And remember, 12 Days of Giftmas starts on December 1st. You're going to want to mark your calendar every single day to be sure that you are signing up and maximizing your chances to win. Be sure that you're following me at Lindsey Elmore on Instagram and Facebook, and that you have signed up for our mailing list over at lindseyelmore.com. Get started, get excited about everything that we're giving away by heading to lindseyelmore.com/shop12days to save on all of our sponsors' amazing health and wellness products. The Lindsey Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsey Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsey Elmore Show by heading to lindseyelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsey Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.